listeners, you've probably already heard part one of our talk with Jeremy Rifkin. If not, go back and check that out. What will follow will be part two of our chat with the best-selling author. I'm trying to think, too, what this all means, as we all kind of like to embrace a role as global citizens. And I know it's a cliche, but I've seen the old adage, think globally and act locally. Can you talk a little bit how that mindset, if put into use, might transform the world as we know it?
I think we're already seeing that. You know, I grew up in a geopolitical world. Post-Westphalia in the 1600s, the nation-state emerged in the modern era based on the first and then the second Industrial Revolution platforms. In that period of time, from around 1700s till 2008 or 9, we believe that every individual is a sovereign, autonomous agent, and that we compete with every other individual in the world for scarce resources in a zero-sum game. We've also see our nations as representing our sovereign, autonomous agents. And they, too, compete with each other, both in the marketplace and the battlefield, for scarce resources in a zero-sum game. That's not going away anytime soon, but the third Industrial Revolution comes with a different frame of reference, what we call biosphere consciousness, not geopolitical consciousness. We're now connecting the world, and we have young people who are Skyping in global classrooms, and their assignments are global, and they're interacting all over the world with their peers. We have over 1.5 billion people on Google, and they're sharing the research of the world. We have Wikipedia, which is the largest knowledge site in the world, all being shared. We have 1 out of 5 people on Facebook interacting as a kind of a fictional family. So young people are increasingly being connected digitally. And this Internet of Things is almost a nervous system that allows the collective cognition of the human race to engage each other in real time as peers with all this new communication, energy, and transport. It's creating what we call biosphere consciousness. Now, the biosphere is actually the actual domain that's 20 kilometers that stretches from the stratosphere to the oceans, 20 kilometers. And within that 20 kilometers, that's where all of life and the chemistry of the planet interact as an organism almost to maintain life. So we're getting young people now who are beginning to realize that the indivisible community we all belong to is the biosphere, and that our individual well-being depends on the well-being of every other human being and every other species and all the ecosystems that together allow this thing called life to flourish. So we're getting kids coming home from school now. I'm sure you've seen this anecdotally in your own family, and they're saying to their parents, why do we use so much water when we're bathing? We're wasting it. Why is the television on? We don't need to use the electricity. No one's in the room. Why do we have 2 cars? Why not car share? And the one I particularly like is young people coming home and saying, where'd the hamburger come from on my plate? Because the kids are learning that the hamburger might have come from a rainforest where they had to graze the cow for that hamburger. And when they graze the cow, they have to destroy all the trees to create the soil base. But those trees are the home for rare species of animal and plant life that only live in those tree canopies. So they go extinct. And if they destroy the trees to graze the cow for the hamburger, it means the trees are not absorbing CO2 from industrial emissions and climate change. That means the temperature of the planet goes up, and it means farmers have floods and droughts and can't feed their own families. So the kids are learning something called ecological footprint. And they're learning that everything we do has an ecological footprint that impacts the well-being of all the rest of the life that lives in this biosphere. We can't escape it. We can't isolate it. We're not autonomous. So they're beginning to see themselves as part of a biosphere community. That is a sea change in the way we think, a complete transformation in thinking, but it's going to be a long road to get there, and there's no surety we will get there, but we know that there's a path available at least.
So from a UPS perspective, I got to ask, because it's my professional duty, right? You're saying that it's about more than just getting the package to the doorstep. The customer wants to know everything that went into it at every given step in a supply chain, and they want to know that your business is acting responsibly on the global stage.
Yeah, it's what we call a circular economy. And UPS, of course, is among those companies that are very sensitive to ecological footprint. It's both good for the planet and good for the bottom line. And that is, if you can use this Internet of Things platform and take big data across your value system. In other words, let's look at UPS. You pick up, you deliver, you have warehouses, distribution centers, you have vehicles. All of that is part of a value chain for managing, powering, moving economic activity. To the extent that UPS can use the Internet of Things and all that big data across its value chain and transport, it can use that data with its own analytics to create algorithms and apps to dramatically increase its aggregate efficiency and its productivity at every step of its transfer goods and services. But at the same time, that reduces its ecological footprint, because it means the more aggregate efficient you are, the less you're using and the less you're wasting and the more you're recycling. So good for the bottom line and good for the planet. I think the other thing to suggest here is that the transportation internet of the three internets, communication, energy, and transport, is going to be critical. And companies like UPS are going to be there collaborating across industry sectors with ICT and with the real estate industry and with electronics and with electricity power transmission. And you will help erect this transportation logistics internet so that you can begin to connect warehouses and distribution centers and final end users in a system that's going to be increasingly automated. Your vehicles are going to be increasingly electric and fuel cell. They're going to be operating by near zero marginal cost renewable energy, because once you put in the fixed cost, the sun is free, the wind is free. And those vehicles are going to be driverless with very low marginal cost down the road, not tomorrow morning. You're still going to need people in those vehicles to have the real service between people, so the employment will still be there, but the vehicles are going to be more assured on driverless systems. And companies like UPS will help erect and manage the automated GPS transportation logistics networks in partnership with other industries that are crucial to moving goods and services. So it's highly disruptive in a good way, because it moves us to a transportation logistics system that really reduces our ecological footprint on this planet by being more efficient, being more productive, and being more interactive.
You know, I think one of my favorite phrases, at least I hear in the English language, is what's next. And we're always talking about what's coming down the pipe. Is there anything, whether it's, you know, right in your wheelhouse, what you're working on, that you think might just really surprise some folks in terms of economics, technology, anything that stands out for the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years that really could change the way that you and I and the global community interacts with one another?
I think that what's going to be interesting is this shift into augmented reality and virtual reality that we're beginning to see emerging here in news, journalism, and film. It's a big leap forward in communication. Virtual reality is where, you know, you are equipped with the appropriate headsets, et cetera, and you can actually feel like you are really there when something's happening that's not in the same place where you exist. In other words, they have now virtual reality documentaries now where you visit, a refugee camp in the Middle East, and you actually feel like you're walking right there among the people there in real time, and your actual neural circuitry of your body experiences the event as if you are there. And this is now emerging, as you know, as a big new communication form. Our neural circuitry is designed to be empathic. It's designed to experience the others as if it were ourselves. And this allows you really to be in two places at once. This is actually happening now. So you can actually feel you're somewhere else, experience it emotionally, and it allows us to develop a deeper sense of empathy, because we can feel that someone may be at 5,000, 10,000 miles away. If we're there with them in a virtual reality frame of reference, we can actually experience that moment as if we were there face-to-face. This allows us to extend our empathic regard and begin to see our fellow human beings as if they were immediately and intimately engaged with us. And that allows us to create what we call global consciousness. I wrote a book called The Empathic Civilization, which is a narrative of how empathy is developed evolutionarily through history. This may be the next stage as we move into a third industrial revolution, an interconnected world. This augmented virtual reality that's now moving will not just be entertainment. It'll allow us to actually experience each other intimately and more empathically and begin to see ourselves as an extended human family living on one planet at one moment in history.
Right. But we can still enjoy the video games, though, right?
Absolutely. That was part of it. I mean, the entertainment's great.
It's great.
You got to make a little money, too, with it, and the entertainment field is going to really be robust for virtual reality.
I don't doubt it at all. Hey, thanks so much, Jeremy. That was really great, and we all look forward to your chat later this month at UPS.
Thank you very much for having me on.